And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on a celebratory Wednesday as the Atlanta Braves are World Series champions for the first time in over 20 years. We'll talk all about it. We'll exercise some demons for Georgia sports fans. Plus, our first college football playoff ranking was also released last night. We'll get to that. Winners and losers from the first ranking and my main takeaways. What it all means. Get to that coming up. Also, a big test for Florida and the Gamecocks on Saturday. A quarterback that both Clemson and South Carolina should keep an eye on. A wild story involving a monkey in college football. A few loose ends to tie up from Halloween weekend in the sports world, and a whole lot more over the next few hours. We'll talk some golf with Jeremy Schilling in about an hour. Dave Bartu will join us in about 30 minutes to break down the first college football playoff ranking, and we'll celebrate the Braves World Series win all afternoon long. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Wednesday, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
What's going on yesterday or last night is the game was getting ready to start.
Yeah.
I had it on 98.9 during the pregame.
Yeah.
Then I switched it over to our classic country station, 98.5.
Uh-huh.
And it was strange because the song Houston by the Gatlin Brothers came on.
Ah.
And then I guess it just turned out it was about where the game was being played.
Yes, that's right. And the Braves end up getting the win last night and win the World Series. That was a sign of things to come in terms of where they were going to be celebrating last night. Let's talk about that win last night and the World Series for the Braves. Look, I'll be honest. As a Red Sox fan, I know what it feels like. I remember when the Red Sox won in 2004. Long time coming, first of my lifetime, first of most Red Sox fans' lifetimes. And the next morning, before going to school, I was still young enough, I was in school at the time, I remember my mother and I going to the store to get into line, and we had to get there, and I think the store opened even earlier than usual to go get our World Series merchandise gear. And we got everything. I got a short sleeve shirt, I got a long sleeve shirt, I got the World Series hat, we got a pennant that I think is still on my wall. I got one of the pennants. I think it was that one, 2004. And the line was up around the block. Everybody was trying to get their Red Sox merchandise. The fact that they just won a World Series, and it was already, you know, it's in the local stores. They were ready to go, and we were in line at like 7 a.m. the next morning. Got up early, went before she had to go drop me off at school. And, oh, what a thrill. You were just floating all day, right? I was still young enough. I was in school. You hated going to school as a kid, but that day it was glorious. And I brought in my new Red Sox World Series hat and long sleeve shirt, and you were just floating on a cloud, not only all day, but really all offseason until the next World Series. It's a remarkable feeling, especially when you've been waiting so long for it, like at the time Red Sox fans were. And even I was in, you know, I was still a kid. I didn't endure it as long as my father did or other Red Sox fans. Braves fans, you've been waiting for this moment for over 25 years with all the heartbreaks along the way, not only for the Atlanta Braves, but also just the Georgia sports scene if you pull for all those other teams. And in a year when it wasn't expected, right, of all the years, that's the funny thing about the Braves. When they had the great teams throughout the 90s and they won the division title 14 straight years, no, that wasn't good enough. When you had Glavin, Smoltz, Maddox, nope, sorry, not a good enough team to win the World Series those years. But this year, when you had only 88 wins and you were under 500 until August and you lost your best hitter and your best pitcher and then even Ozuna along the way, your best addition from a year ago is out for the rest of the year because of his issues. And the Braves were 8 games out of first place in the middle of the summer and they were under 500. That's the year that they actually finally win the World Series. And they did it with pitching. Let's break down last night and this series for the Braves. As I've continued to say, in other sports, defense doesn't win anymore. In football, it's not so much about the defense. In basketball, certainly not so much about the defense anymore. But baseball, regardless of the switch to homers and analytics and this and that, it's still about pitching. Pitching still wins World Series. The Braves tossed 2 shutouts in the series. They held the Astros to an average of under 4 runs a game. It was the pitching that led the way. And last night, Max Fried was excellent. What's most impressive about the Braves are the teams that they went up against in the last 2 series. The Dodgers led the National League in runs scored at about 5.5. The Astros led the American League in runs scored this year at about 5.5. And between the 2 series combined, the Braves held both teams combined to about 3.5 runs, 2 runs below their average, the 2 highest scoring offenses in the league. And the Braves, let's be honest, right? They weren't the top pitching staff in the league. And then especially once you lose Charlie Morton, you didn't have Soroka all year. The bullpen was a question even throughout the season and the last couple of years. But in the postseason, the bullpen was fantastic, as was just the entire pitching staff outside of a couple of Max Fried starts. And they held the 2 best offenses in baseball to just slightly more than half of their season average in runs scored in the biggest games of the season. Pitching still wins World Series, and it was the pitching for the Braves. We'll focus on the homers and Jorge Soler and the additions to the lineup, but you're not doing that. You're not making that run if it wasn't for the pitching from the Braves. The Astros had 2 homers the entire series, which takes me to another thing I'll pat myself on the back. I always tell you, you can't win with home runs. And I know the Braves hit a bunch of home runs. Jorge Soler had the big one last night, Freddie Freeman as well, and they hit plenty of home runs along the way, but you can't rely on the homers. And the Astros were a team that didn't necessarily do that throughout the season. But come World Series time, against that good pitching, they had only 2 home runs. They struggled to hit the ball out of the park. They struggled to score runs a couple of different nights. They lost the series in 6 games yesterday. Jorge Soler had more homers in the World Series than the entire Astros team, which speaks to the pitching of the Braves, but also some of the struggles of the Astros. Couldn't rely on the home run ball, and the pitching was too good that they couldn't score otherwise. And then there's Max Fried, who last night was on the bump and pitched fantastic. And as I was watching that World Series game last night, it reminded me of the great movie Dumb and Dumber from the 90s. Because we were talking yesterday for Max Fried, he needed to show something. I compared him to Greg Maddux. Great pitcher. Greg Maddux, one of the all-time greats, Hall of Famer. Pitched pretty well in the postseason as well. Maybe not as well as the regular season, but still did pretty good in the playoffs. Except when he needed him most. 1-5 in elimination games. He would pitch well early in the series, and then when he was on the bump with the season on the line, he would lose. And for Max Fried, pitched great in the regular season, had playoff success in the past, but this year, when they needed him even more, he had struggled his last few outings, an ERA of over 7 in his last 3 playoff starts. And with the season not so much on the line, if they lost, they'd still be around for Game 7, but with a chance to go win the World Series with the Astros season on the line, Fried was excellent. And it didn't start out that way. He allowed a couple of base runners in the first inning. He gets his ankle stepped on. I'm thinking of Tim Hudson's broken ankle 8 years ago against the Mets on the same play for the Braves. And I'm thinking, oh boy, here we go. Right? Fried is not going to be able to settle in. And boy, did he. And he was excellent. And he got plenty of run support. And the Braves closed it out. And as I was watching that last night, I was thinking of Dumb and Dumber for 2 different reasons as I watched the Braves. But because Max Fried went out there and Max Fried totally redeemed himself last night, much like Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this. And totally redeem yourself!
Yeah, Max Fried totally redeemed himself after his early postseason struggles. You forget about all of that with the performance last night. He turned into Tom Glavin instead of Greg Maddux. Maddux struggled in those big games. Tom Glavin, despite having a losing record in the postseason, right, he was on the mound when they won their last World Series in 95. A left-hander who pitched great that night and also had almost identical numbers to Max Fried this year. both lefties, similar numbers, both on the mound, in Game 6 of a World Series, both pitching lights out, and their team wins. For the first time since Glavine in 95, the Braves won the World Series last night. He turned into Tom Glavine last night instead of Greg Maddux. And this Braves team, I came around to the idea in the last week or two that at this point, maybe they are just a team of destiny. You know, the Braves, as mentioned, during the summer, they were 8 games out of first place at one point. They did not get over 500 until August. And at one point, going back to July 31st, trade deadline day, according to FanGraphs, the Braves at that point had just a 16% chance of making the playoffs. They had just a 2% chance to then make the World Series, and they had less than a 1% chance of winning the World Series, which again reminded me of the great movie Dumb and Dumber with the Braves having an opportunity to turn it around and win the World Series in the end.
What do you think the chances are of a guy like you and a girl like me ending up together?
Well, Lloyd, that's difficult to say. We really don't...
Hit me with it. Just give it to me straight. I came a long way just to see you married. Just least you can do is level with me. What are my chances?
Not good.
You mean not good like 1 out of 100?
I'd say more like 1 out of 1,000,000.
So you're telling me there's a chance? Yeah!
Less than a 1% chance for the Braves to win the World Series according to the metrics on July 31st. But much like Lloyd Christmas, you were telling them there's a chance. And they went out and they made the moves at the trade deadline and they go on to win the World Series. Fourth fewest wins for a World Series champion, just the 12th best record in baseball this year heading into the postseason, and in the end, World Series champions. And you look how they got there. Right, it was Rosario coming to the team and having, at least in his portion with the Braves, a career year. Numbers rebounding from where he was before. Jorge Soler was batting under the Mendoza line in Kansas City. He's the World Series MVP with the Braves. Tyler Matzek was out of baseball pitching in Texas in an Indy League 2 years ago. He was the star of the bullpen. I'm not saying it was flukish, right? But it's one of those things that just everything came together. And it seemed like along the way, the Braves could do no wrong. You lose Acuna midseason. You make all these moves. Then you lose Charlie Morton in the World Series. Plenty of hiccups along the way. And they still couldn't be stopped. The Braves became the first team ever to lose their number one player in WAR at the midseason point and win the World Series. Now, in case you're not familiar, that sounds a little weird. Right? I'm not talking about WAR. I'm not talking about the 1940s when Ted Williams had to leave baseball to go, you know, defend our country or to go be part of World War II. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the statistic WAR, which breaks down the most valuable player for each team. The Braves are the first team ever in Major League Baseball history to lose, essentially, their most valuable player midseason and still go on to win the World Series. Teams usually don't do it. They also became just the second team ever to lose, statistically, their best starting pitcher in the World Series and still win. Charlie Morton led the Braves in wins and strikeouts this year, got injured in Game 1. The only other time that that has happened, where a pitcher led a team in wins and strikeouts and got injured that early in a World Series and their team still won the World Series, was 50 years ago when Doc Ellis did it with the, was the Pirates 50 years ago? Or the A's in the early 70s? 50 years. Also, additionally, the Braves became the first team ever to swap out the entire outfield, right? Because of Acuna's injury, Ozuna's issues, they went out, they traded for Jock Peterson, they traded for Jorge Soler, if you want to count him as an outfielder slash DH, Adam Duvall. It's the first time that a team had three new outfielders compared to where they were in the first half of the season and went on to win a World Series. It was the longest time for a World Series champ to take to get over 500, 111 games. First time that a team was under 500 that long and won a World Series. And the last note I'll give you about how improbable this was, the Braves' playoff opponents this year had a combined 33 more wins than the Braves in the regular season. That is the largest gap of any team to win a World Series. Nobody was a bigger underdog in the sense of records in the postseason and went on to win a World Series, to beat that many good teams on their path to winning a World Series despite having fewer than 90 wins. It was almost like a team of destiny, right? And if you're a Georgia fan, maybe you think, that's it. We finally broke the curse, Right after all the heartbreaks over the years, Georgia's now the number one team in the college football playoff rankings. They're next. Georgia wins the championship this year. And you think, we finally did it. We broke this curse for how improbable this was for the Braves. And usually, Georgia sports are on the opposite end. Whenever they're favored, that's when they choke it away. And this time, they pulled it off. Maybe it's the start of something. Now, here's how it sounded the final out on Braves radio last night as they get their first World Series since 1995, winning Game 6.
0-2 on the way. Chopper out to Dansby. Dansby throws to first base. Is this happening? It is! The Atlanta Braves are world champions! The Atlanta Braves have won the 2021 World Series in 6 games over the Houston Astros. Pure euphoria down on the field as they're bouncing all over the infield and in the booth.
Final out last night on Braves radio as they get the World Series victory. Braves starters got 62 outs in the World Series, fewest by any World Series champion. The relievers got 97 outs, most by any World Series champion. Great job done by the bullpen and the pitching staff. Max Fried became the first pitcher since 1985 to go 6 scoreless innings with no walks in a World Series clincher last night. He was excellent. The Braves did it with their pitching. And also Alex Anthopoulos, who unfortunately couldn't be there to celebrate last night because I guess he has COVID, so he had to quarantine at home, which really stinks. And hopefully he'll be all right. But he deserves so much credit for the job done. Because the hero each round, Jock Peterson in the DS, then last round was Rosario, then it was Soler in the World Series, all guys that he added. And I know he's been compared to Theo Epstein in 2004 for the Red Sox, who made some moves. The Red Sox weren't much higher than 500 at the trade deadline. He went out, added Orlando Cabrera, traded Nomar Garciaparra that year, added Dave Roberts, Doug Mankiewicz, and it helped them turn around the season and win the World Series, breaking a curse in 2004. Anthopoulos, maybe not as extreme this year, wasn't an 86-year curse, but the moves he made to get them their first World Series in a number of years was remarkable. I don't think it's being a prisoner of the moment to say that truly was one of the best jobs done by a baseball executive this year for Anthopoulos to get this done and bring a World Series to the Braves.
Oh, and by the way,
yeah,
that clip is what you heard on our sister station, 94.7 and 910.
Yes. Now, did they carry the game last night? Because I thought only ESPN could broadcast it.
Well, you definitely heard it here on 98.9.
Yes.
As I said earlier.
Right. I know that. And later on, we will get to our sound check where we will play the different calls from around the world of that final out. But last thing before we go here in our opening segment, let's hear from Freddie Freeman, who was, of course, after down on the field after the win last night, caught up with to the TV side of things. Here was Freddie last night on the field after the World Series win. Oh, we'll grab it. Hold on. All right, we'll try to grab that coming up, and we'll hear from Freddie Freeman. When we come back, Braves get the World Series victory. Now, a lot of people thought that the Astros, this was going to be some source of vindication for the Astros if they won this series. I think along the way, it showed how impactful their cheating was in 2017. And also, I want to touch on this fact that everybody points to the Braves cheating scandal. Can we understand that these were two completely different things? We'll get to that coming up. Plus, we'll react to the college football playoff rankings as well and continue to bask in the glory of the Braves World Series championship for the first time in 95. I jumped on the bandwagon. I admit it. And it's no pandering, because I told you midseason I thought the Braves sucked. We don't pander around here. I just tell you how it is. I tell you, the Gamecocks program has sucked for years. Clemson football sucks this year. But I was happy to see the Braves, easy team to root for. Happy to see them win it last night, and just glad it wasn't the Houston Astros. And more on that coming up. Who's this? What do we got here?
This is Orangeburg County native Eartha Kitt with Atlanta Blues.
Oh, not blue today, not anymore, with their first World Series championship since 95.
Maybe she's talking about one of their colors.
Oh, okay.
It is dark blue.
That works. We'll continue to break it all down coming up. It's more Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. when he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot. And the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now, you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold.
Coming up, soul, 'cause I think I'm better. This was a big series for the Astros to try to prove themselves. I think they did prove something along the way. It's the Maurer Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. In this case, the devil went out of Georgia. They're leaving Georgia. Georgia sports no longer cursed after the one of the most improbable World Series wins we've had with the Braves, given less than a 1% chance on July 31st to pull this off. And here they are as World Series champions for just the second time since coming to Atlanta.
But you're forgetting,
yeah,
the devil lost in this song.
Oh, that's true. Charlie Daniels kicked the devil out of there.
Johnny did.
Oh, okay. Same idea. We'll perform our own exorcism later on to get the demons out of Georgia sports, especially with Georgia number one in the college football playoff rankings, which we will get to coming up a little bit later on. Dave Bartu will join us in less than 10 minutes to break down the first college football playoff rankings. I'll save my thoughts coming up because I got more thoughts on the Braves and this series with the Astros. You know, we thought coming in, the talk, and I did not agree with it, but the idea, the narrative was, oh, the Astros can vindicate themselves this World Series. I didn't think so. What difference does it make if they win now? They cheated to win in 2017, right? If you cheat on a test and then you pass a different test later that semester without cheating, that doesn't prove anything to me about the previous test. They're different tests. You cheated on the last one. Even if you didn't have to, that was the choice you made. You made a bad decision, and you got caught. And the Astros in this series showed to me how important that cheating was. Because don't forget, it was a Game 7 victory. Right? You want to tell me, like, oh, they would have won anyways. Would they have? Because even while cheating, it still took to the seventh game to get past the Dodgers. Right? It still took to that final pitch to get past the Yankees in the ALCS. Now, props to them for, we believe, doing it cleanly and getting to the World Series twice since then. But in the World Series, when you go up against the best team in baseball on the biggest stage and the best pitchers since the cheating scandal, the Astros are 1-6 in home World Series games since then. 1-6. And in those seven games, they've been outscored 46-20. Their opponents have scored more than twice as many runs as them. They're not even close games. They're getting blown out. And by the way, in those seven home World Series games since, they had scored fewer than 3 runs in 5 of 7 games. The offense has struggled. They did last night, shut out at home this season on the line. Alex Bregman and Carlos Correa batting under 200 in the two World Series since. And by the way, they scored 20 runs in the 27 innings at home in that 2017 World Series. The Astros did 20 runs in 27 innings. They have scored 20 runs in the 7 games since. The amount of runs they scored in that one World Series at home, they have scored the same amount in 2 World Series at home since. So please, miss me with this whole idea of, it didn't make much of a difference. They would have won anyways. They're a really talented team. They did prove something. And it wasn't what everyone, the supporters of the Astros, try to say. They proved how important it was. Because since then, 1-6 at home, averaging 3 runs a game, getting outscored by more than twice as many runs in those games, 0-2 in World Series, yeah, they deserve credit for getting there. But then, you have to be able to perform against the best team in baseball on the biggest stage. It's hard to get to the World Series. It's even harder to then win it, to be the best team in baseball. No doubt the Astros are still a really good team with a lot of talent. But maybe the reason why they did actually win the World Series, get over that hump in 2017, was because they're banging on trash cans. And then people always point to, again, maybe Astros supporters, you know, oh, the Braves cheated. They got caught in 2017. They did. They were doing something they weren't supposed to. They did get caught. Here's the difference between the two. It's apples and oranges. I don't understand the people that try to compare these two things. Number of differences. For one, the Braves didn't win a World Series by doing it. That's the big difference to me. Guys cheat all the time, but if you cheat to go win a World Series, that's a little bit stronger to me than cheating just to hit a few extra home runs or to win a game or two in the regular season. To go all the way to a World Series is a big difference. But the other differences are there's only one GM who's banned for life from baseball. It's not the Astros GM when they were cheating to win a World Series. It was the Braves GM. John Coppola, however you said his last name, he's banned for life from baseball. Anybody from the Astros team get banned for life? No, the punishment was much stricter for the Braves. In fact, the Braves are still paying their dues. They still had less money to spend in the international market as recent as this past offseason, 4 years later. The Astros, are they dealing with any punishment this year? Well, I don't think so. The Braves got zero at-bats from those 13 players they had to sign. Or I didn't say had to. They got zero at-bats from those 13 players they illegally signed. The Astros, yeah, they were cheating for their at-bats in a World Series. The Braves also had to release those 13 players they illegally signed that then became free agents to go to other teams. Did the Astros have to give anything back? No, they hung a banner celebrating their World Series in 2017. I don't understand those that can't see the difference between these two. The punishment was stricter on the Braves. They gave back what they benefited, what they got as a form of benefit by cheating. They handed it back. The Astros did not. The Astros players didn't get punished. Right? The Braves suffered a more severe punishment. And most importantly, the Braves didn't win a World Series during that time. The Astros did. That's the most important thing. If you want to cheat and still finish in last place, be my guest. I don't care as much. You shouldn't cheat to begin with, but you're finishing in last. I don't care. If you cheat your way to a World Series, I'm going to care a little bit more. And the Braves got zero at-bats from those guys, didn't win anything during that time, and still dealing with the punishment up until this season, now win a World Series, while still dealing with the consequences of those actions. The Astros haven't won a World Series since then. That's the difference between the two. There's quite a few differences. Don't try to compare those two. Yeah, the Braves did something they shouldn't have, but it does not compare to the Astros doing what they should not have in order to win a World Series and how they have played in those games since then, furthering how big of a deal it was in 2017. We'll switch to the college football playoff rankings when we come back and catch up with Dave Bartu and break it all down. I'll give you my thoughts as well, and we'll continue to enjoy the Braves World Series win throughout the afternoon. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Cherokee people, Cherokee tribe, so proud you live, so proud you die.
Not only did the Braves win the World Series last night, but we got the first college football playoff rankings as well. We'll continue to react to the Braves World Series win last night while also breaking down the college football playoff rankings. And joining us now to do so is one of the best at predicting how all this stuff will go. He's Dave Bartu on Twitter at CFB Matrix. Give him a follow there so that you won't be surprised when these playoff rankings come out each week here moving forward. And for all the latest and great insights in college football, joins us a couple times a year. Dave's with us now. Dave, good afternoon. How are you?
Dude, I am doing great today. Great today. The modeling of the playoff committee yesterday was, well, bloody spot on again.
Yeah, so you always nail this thing. You've gotten the playoff teams each year since we've gone to this. So with that said, what was the biggest surprise, if there was one, for you last night with our initial playoff rankings?
In the top 12, there was no surprise. I think the big takeaway is simply that the G5 teams just aren't allowed at the party.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so, you know, from Cincinnati all the way down, the only Group of Five team that was projected in their same in the same spot where they landed in the top 25 was Fresno. Everybody else was either out of the top 25 or way down. So in the top 12, the only one that has really a complaint. And this is obviously based on the formula and the last 7 years of the playoff committee acting all the same way. They do the same thing every time. The narrative just changes. Is Cincinnati. That's it. But, you know, because by the numbers, everybody else was in exact order. Exact order. And for good reason, except Cincinnati. They're the only ones that slid down. And to me, it was just simply a message of, don't bother. It's not going to happen. And Gary said, the chairman said the same thing. He finally said it out loud. He's like, they're not getting in. You know, he's like, you have to have at least five Power Five games. The only one who's not a Power Five that we feel is even legitimate is BYU. He said it last night. So if you're a Group of Five fan, he would start lobbying for your 16 or 32 team playoff like the FCS, because it ain't happening at the Power Five level.
Yeah, certainly made clear once again last night with the initial rankings. Yeah, with that said, you know, we always are surprised with how this goes. People get up in arms, but for you who follows this closely and you have your models and you know how they do this, for you, I know you're not surprised. You find it very predictable. So, you know, what does the committee seem to care about the most that leads to this consistency from, you know, what you expect with these rankings?
Well, there's really only eight things that you look at. That's it. I mean, our model isn't some fancy algorithm or anything like that. It is just eight variables. And in 2014, when this came out, the guy who was heading all of this, Hancock, laid out the variables. He told everybody what the ranking rules are so that if you or I are on the committee, the result is always the same. It's different people. It's different talking points, but they have a framework to get it done. Okay, and so the framework breaks down, and I'll try to just simplify it as much as I can, but obviously wins and losses, all right? Quality wins. Now, a quality win changes every week from the standpoint that a quality win is only a team that is above 500. So this week, if your favorite team has a quality win and that team is, let's say, 5-4, and they lose, they're no longer a quality win the next week. Boom, that's how you get shifts. So when you're looking at a team like these what-ifs, so what if Oklahoma wins out? Okay, what happened? What is their schedule? What are all the teams doing on the schedule? What are all the teams around them? It's a huge, huge 25,000-foot view. So you have your quality win, you have your top 25 win. And a top 25 win is, again, fluid. It's not when you beat them are they top 25. Is were they top 25 last week? So at the end of the season, if you want a top 25 win, the team that count as a top 25 win is in the last poll. That's it. Okay? And then you have a couple of other variables. You have game control, which is modified margin of victory, except quarter by quarter. You have bad losses, any loss to a team that's under 500. That can change if they go above 500. And then a margin of loss. I can't remember what the threshold is. Do not get blown out. Okay, losing by double digits or more is really a big hit on the modeling. It's cost a lot of teams when they lose bad. But that's it. That's the whole thing. It's strength of schedule. And those are all the variables that they use for their initial framework. And then they spend a couple hours talking about the teams. They tweak a few things to make it look like they're doing something. And boom, everybody flies home back to their regular jobs.
You just broke it down, though. So with that said, what's the biggest misnomer, pet peeve that you have with the misconception of how this all works?
Oh, my God. Where do I start? Right? Where do I start? One of them is people constantly using, like, ESPN stats. Oh, strength of record. What? I mean, using stupid stuff the committee doesn't use. So that's one of them that drives me nuts. Probably the biggest one that drives me nuts is the eye test. Oh, the eye test. Number one, the AP people, the coaches poll people, and the committee people, vast majority of them have the time nor the expertise to be able to do the eye test equally on every team, okay? Because imagine going through every team and watching an hour of film, right? So you understand how that team runs offense, runs defense. Well, you only have Sunday, Monday to rank these teams. You have to watch 30 to 60 hours of film in 2 days. And you're an AD making $100,000 a month, you're not wasting your time. So the eye test is probably my biggest pet peeve. That doesn't exist on any level at all. They don't have time for it, and nobody can apply it equally.
Let me ask you about a couple of teams as we talk with Dave Bartu on Twitter at CFB Matrix, one of the best when it comes to breaking down of really everything going on in college football, but especially the college football playoff rankings. Alabama at number two, I know, surprised some people. It sounds like because of the lack of surprises on your end, you would have Alabama. You think they're in a good spot there at the number two in the rankings?
That's where we had them. That's where they modeled. Even without the Prop 25 team in Mississippi State, because you got these Prop 25 teams that are supporting the top 15. Your Mississippi State, your NC State, and so forth. But Alabama had the third highest playoff committee strength of schedule coming in. They had the second best game control. They had two quality wins, a top 25 win, and you put all that together, and they were number two. I mean, any team, Team X with their profile was number two. It's not about Alabama. It's never been that way. Their game control and their strength of schedule is still off the charts, even though when you look at their record, they go, oh, 7-1. There's a bunch of them like that. No, you got to look at the entire package and resume on these things.
And I know this is obviously going to be very fluid moving forward, and it could depend on a number of different variables. But say Alabama loses to Georgia in the SEC title game, I guess depending on what else happens in college football, could you see a scenario where Alabama this year becomes the first two-loss team to be put into the playoff?
No. I mean, I guess there is a scenario that it could happen, you know, where Oklahoma has – you know, has two losses and they're not the conference champion. Oregon has a second loss, not a conference champion. No, I really see, because with the second loss, everybody focuses on the second loss, but usually the second loss, what it is a lost opportunity to add quality wins to your resume, right? Because if they lose to Georgia, how many top 25 wins are they going to have? One? Maybe two. How many quality wins are they going to have, especially since Miami fell on their face? Miami was smart to be scheduled, but they suck this year. So that actually hurts Alabama in the quality win. They were trying to pick up a quality win. So it's not just the two losses. It's the loss of opportunity. They're simply not going to have a strong enough resume. They should not have a strong enough resume to be able to compete to these with these other teams. Are going to have more quality wins, a conference title, et cetera.
Georgia, the number one team, no surprise there. And, you know, if they win out, of course, they'll be there. So they control their own destiny in that sense. From the other teams, who has the most control of their destiny? You know, like a Michigan State, Oklahoma, I would even throw in Wake Forest. Which team is in the next best spot that as long as they just win out, they'll comfortably be in the playoff?
Well, you know, on something like that, let's talk that through, okay? What's the most important thing for the committee? Top 25 wins, quality wins. Who has the most of those left on the schedule? Oklahoma, Michigan State, and Ohio State. There's your three teams right there, because they all, you know, Oklahoma has two more top 25 opportunities and a conference championship. Same thing with Ohio State. Ohio State wins out, they're going to have to go through three top 25 teams. Bam, they're in. Ohio State controls their destiny. So does Michigan State. Okay, either one of those went out, bang, they are in. Georgia's already in. Georgia can lose to Alabama if they keep this up. They're in. The teams that need help on the outside, even if Oregon wins out, they don't have top 25 teams in their way. So Oregon's resume is actually, even at 12-1, the non-conference losses, which created fewer quality wins for Oregon, actually hurts them. Same thing for Wake Forest. So to me, if you're ranking who has the best opportunity, look at the end of the schedule. To me, it's Oklahoma, it's Ohio State. Those two went out, they're in. Georgia went out, they're in. And it probably comes down to Oregon and Wake. And who's got the best combined schedule? Oregon's kicker is Ohio State. That is huge. That is the big probably determining factor there. The other one to watch out for Oregon is Fresno State. Fresno State's in the top 25. If they win out, that's Oregon's second one. That might be the kicker for them as well. I think Cincinnati, obviously, but Wake Forest is on the outside looking in. They need help.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about Wake Forest. I mean, how much help? Because we could be looking at a team that goes undefeated, wins the ACC, but really doesn't have any impressive victories to this point. How much help would a Wake Forest need in order to try to sneak in this year?
Well, again, it comes down to the resume. So if you look at Wake Forest, you have to project, okay, how many quality wins are they going to have? Are they going to have a top 25 win? You know, are they playing North Carolina State, or are they playing Pitt? And if they play them and beat them, do those teams stay in the top 25 at the end? Because they're only a top 25 win if they're there on the last day. So I think with Wake at 13, even at 13-0, the resume lacking quality wins, and particularly top 25 wins, is still they are going to need other teams to lose. 13-0 in the ACC, if all those other teams win out, is not going to get it done.
Last thing, let's end where we started, talking with Dave Bartu on Twitter at CFB Matrix. Follow him there to keep up with all this. As you said, the biggest surprise, or the biggest takeaway at least, is Cincinnati and the continued, say, disrespect, let's say, to the group of five. So for Cincinnati, how much chaos or how much do they need to change here in the next couple of weeks in order for them to actually be given, you know, the opportunity to go to the playoff?
It's unfathomable. I can't even imagine the train wreck that has to be created to get a team that plays eight teams that recruit outside the top 80, that has one top 25 win, one victory over a power five team that's above 500. I said it in 2014, and I'll just say it till this thing is done. Ain't no G5 getting into this playoff under any circumstance, any situation that we're going to see. I can't imagine what it would take to get Cincinnati in there.
So certainly not good for the group of five fans and Cincinnati, who were hopeful of good news last night. Probably won't get it this year. He's Dave Bartu on Twitter at CFB Matrix. Follow him there for all the latest. He's the best at breaking down and projecting and predicting how this whole thing will play out with the college football playoff. Dave, appreciate the time as always. We'll catch up with you down the road.
Take it easy, brother.
Hey, you as well. Appreciate it. Always love catching up with Dave. He's the best at breaking it all down. And follow him on Twitter. He uses his model. He puts his information out there. He nailed it last night, how it would go, at least the top of the rankings. Not many surprises for him in how he breaks this all down. With that said, I'll give my takeaways to the rankings coming up a little bit later on and who came out as the biggest winner and loser and all that. But we'll wrap up hour one when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up hour one of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Dave Bartu breaking down the college football playoff rankings that initially came out last night. I'll give you my thoughts coming up a little bit later on. If you ever miss anything in the show, such as Dave breaking it all down, simplifying the process, telling you all you need to know, you can find it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts. Trying to blend the two big stories of the night together, the college football playoff rankings. We'll continue to break it down throughout the afternoon. Same with the Braves World Series championship last night. Is this the Allman Brothers? Who is
it? Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay.
Their number, like Hotlanta.
Aha, makes sense. Playing Georgia or Atlanta or Braves-themed music throughout the afternoon to celebrate the win. Here's what's interesting about the Braves and now Major League Baseball is we always talk so much about the parity in the NFL, but Major League Baseball actually, over the last 21 years, since the start of the turn of the century, there have been more champions, different champions in Major League Baseball than any other sport. In the last 21 years, 15 different Major League Baseball teams have now won the World Series. Almost a different champion every year. We haven't had a repeat champion back-to-back since 2000. Now, you have the Giants win 3 out of 6, and we have the Dodgers and Astros at least get there a bunch. But when it comes to winning, half the league has won a World Series this century. Gone are the days of the 90s dominated by the Braves and Yankees. Now, half the league. That's good. That's what you want. Gives everybody else hope. Gives them a chance. Gives them, at least for a season or two, rooting interest along the way that their team is competing for a World Series champ. In fact, 27 of 30 Major League teams have been to a league championship series since 2000. Right? So only three teams have failed to get one step away from the World Series. And those would be San Diego, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh, by the way. So I feel for those fan bases. Every other fan base has at least gotten to an ALCS or NLCS this century. But not Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, or San Diego of all teams with the amount of money they've been spending lately and still underperforming. So 21 of 30 teams, the last number, 21 of 30 teams have been to a World Series. So that's almost 75% of the league have been to a World Series this century. We always talk about the parity in the NFL. The NBA, it's usually the same teams. But we've had more unique champions this century in Major League Baseball than any of the other major four sports. And that should be good for baseball. That should be, they should use that to their advantage instead of being so predictable and having the same teams every year. It's not the case in baseball. And we just had the Atlanta Braves win their first World Series since 1995. I know they're usually good. They're usually in the playoffs. But in terms of actually winning the World Series, it doesn't happen very often. And they pulled it off last night. Three straight World Series champs from the NL as well, by the way. Only the second time that has happened in 40 years. We'll talk more about the Braves and the college football playoff rankings, but we'll talk some golf when we come back, as we do every Wednesday. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.